Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Our government clearly needs a better writing staff. We stumble from one contrived, unbelievable crisis to another. The fiscal cliff now this season is all about the debt ceiling precipice. And you won't believe the crazy solution they've come up with. It'll make the final season of Lost look rational. We'll ask about the latest plot twist, plus the dude himself, actor Jeff Bridges, abides for a while on our show. And Carl lists some of the highlights of his winter break.
Nickelback, head lice, root canals, colonoscopies, and Donald Trump.
It's all coming up right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Federal health officials say it remains far from clear whether this year's flu season has started to peak. As NPR's Rob Stein reports, officials say the flu is just too unpredictable to know where it's headed.
Officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say they're getting mixed signals about where things stand with this year's flu season. On the one hand, the flu has officially reached epidemic levels, and there's widespread flu throughout most of the country. On the other hand, there's some evidence that the flu may have started to wane in some places, like some parts of the South where this year's season started the earliest. But officials remain concerned. That's because this year's flu season started about a month early, and the kind of flu virus that's mainly circulating tends to be particularly nasty. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Cold weather is pushing through the western and central parts of the United States. It's been so chilly in some regions of California that citrus growers have been out in their orchards with wind machines. They're working to raise temperatures by their fruit trees by a few degrees. As the cold weather pushes to the Midwest and eastern parts of the United States, heavy rain could fall on the Midwest, possibly triggering some flooding. NATO and Afghan officials are investigating the death of seven civilians in Wardak province near Kabul. NPR's Sean Carberry reports that the civilians were allegedly killed in an explosion that took place following an operation by Afghan and NATO forces.
The joint forces came under fire while conducting a night raid on a mosque suspected of being a Taliban compound. NATO says the joint troops returned fire and killed four insurgents. One Afghan soldier died in the fighting. The troops then discovered a cache of weapons and explosives and blew up the ordnance on the scene. Afghan officials say that after the troops left the area, local residents began digging through the rubble. That's when the deadly explosion occurred. The Taliban immediately claimed that NATO targeted the civilians with an airstrike. Both NATO and Afghan sources categorically denied that, saying no aircraft fired during or after the operation. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
Former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak is getting a new trial. Mubarak was given a life sentence for failing to stop the killings of protesters who had demonstrated against him. He has since been granted.
The National Weather Service in Nashville has issued a flash flood warning for eastern Davidson County in Middle Tennessee, eastern Robertson County in Middle Tennessee, northeastern Williamson County in Middle Tennessee, northwestern Rutherford County in Middle Tennessee, Sumner County in Middle Tennessee, western Wilson County in Middle Tennessee, until 3 p.m. Central Standard Time. At 10:52 a.m. Central Standard Time, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated an area of very heavy rainfall moving across the warned area. Expect intense rainfall rates of 3 inches per hour, with rainfall amounts of half an inch to an inch. Runoff from this excessive rainfall may cause flash flooding in small creeks and streams and in urban and poor draining areas. Some locations that may be impacted include Gallatin, Hermitage, East Nashville, Belinda City, Brentwood, Cross Plains, Goodlettsville, Green Hill, Hendersonville, Laverne, Lakewood, Millersville, Mount Juliet, Oak Hill, Portland, Rural Hill, Smyrna, Westmoreland, and White House. A flash flood warning means that flooding is imminent or occurring. If you are in the warning area, move to higher ground immediately. Residents living along streams and creeks should take immediate precautions to protect life and property. Do not attempt to cross swiftly flowing waters or waters of unknown depth by foot or by automobile.
For NPR News, I'm Ramona Martinez in Washington.
This is the first anniversary of the sinking of the cruise ship, the Costa Concordia. The ship cruised too close to an Italian island last year and capsized. The accident killed 32 people. Today, relatives of the victims are on the island where they've unveiled a memorial plaque during a ceremony. The ship's captain is accused of several counts of manslaughter causing a shipwreck and of leaving the ship before everyone was evacuated. He has not yet been formally indicted in the Italian legal system. The air pollution in the capital of China is very bad. Beijing's pollution levels are in dangerous zones, and government officials are warning people to stay indoors. Public health specialists say one reason for the gray air in the capital is weather conditions. There's been little wind, and pollutants cannot break up. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Esurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim, online or via mobile at esurance.com.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Oh, good to be back again. Oh, thank you. It is going to be a great show for you today. We've got the dude himself, actor Jeff Bridges, coming in to play our game later. But first, it just so happens that this month marks the 15th anniversary of our show. We premiered in January of 1998, and we are still here. We're very happy. Thank you. Now, those early shows back then, 15 years ago, immediately struck a chord with listeners. What you're about to hear are some actual comments that were sent in from those early listeners.
Listening to Wait, Wait last Saturday actually caused me to feel depressed all day.
Here's another real comment.
I'm certain the builders of the Titanic were proud to launch what they thought was a great ship. But even they had to admit something was wrong after it sank.
And the last one is probably our favorite that we got back then.
The premiere of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me was the worst piece of radio I have ever heard. Period.
But I want you to keep in mind, that listener hadn't yet heard today's show. So let's get things started. Give us a call. The number is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Madeline Mackey, and I'm calling from Laramie, Wyoming.
Hey, Laramie, Wyoming, a beautiful place.
Yes, it is. It's gorgeous.
What do you do there?
I am in grad school studying to be an archaeologist.
An archaeologist?
Yes.
So you're, like, going around and digging up ancient creatures there in the plains of Wyoming?
Something like that.
If you dig down in Wyoming, what do you find?
There's a lot of Native Americans and ancient buffalo and cool stuff.
Well, Madeline, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a columnist and editor for the Houston Chronicle, Ms. Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Madeline.
Hi, nice to be here.
Next, a writer for Real Time with Bill Maher, Mr. Adam Felber is here.
Charmed, Madeline.
And lastly, it's a comedian performing at the Orleans Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, January 25th and 26th, Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Madeline.
Now, Madeline, you're going to play Who's Carl this time. Of course, Carl Castle will start us off for the year with three quotations from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize, Carl's voice on your voicemail. You ready to go?
Yep, I'm ready.
Let us do this thing. Here's your first quote.
What if the Treasury Secretary gets thirsty on the way to stash it in the Federal Reserve and he deposits the wrong coin in the soda machine?
That was a writer from Wired magazine worried about what new denomination of U.S. currency that everybody was talking about this week.
The trillion-dollar coin.
The trillion-dollar coin! Yes, of course! The Republicans are saying they will not raise the debt ceiling in a couple of months unless they get huge budget cuts in return. And if they don't raise the ceiling, the country will default in its debt, and we will get evicted from North America and have to move back in with Britain.
I don't understand. And maybe this doesn't bode well for my chances of winning today, but this is the first I've heard of the trillion-dollar coin.
Well, let me explain.
Please.
As it turns out, there's an obscure law that gives the Treasury Secretary the power to mint commemorative platinum coins in any denomination he wants. So, the idea goes, why not make one platinum coin worth $1 trillion? You put it in the bank, and instantly, you got $1 trillion in your account to pay your bills with.
Who came up with the idea? Because if it wasn't my son, I'm blown away.
This... You know what's so weird about this? Is that it reminds everybody that a lot of money doesn't have to look like what we think a lot of money looks like, right?
Yeah. It is going to screw up those crime series shows on television where they have like the kidnapper and the government marks the money and they open the briefcase and it's got all the stacks.
Exactly.
Instead, it's just going to be a little coin purse.
Madeline, your next quote comes from a climatologist quoted in National Hog Farmer magazine.
Ooh. It was off the chart.
You can imagine how we felt when we found that in our copy of National Hog Farmer. That climatologist, Deke Arndt, was referring to the extreme what experienced in 2012?
Heat?
Yes, indeed, the heat. The record books have closed on 2012. And we can now say officially it was the hottest year ever. As the New York Times said it, it wasn't even close. It was so hot that even comedians are now answering the question, how hot was it? By saying, what's the matter with you? Haven't you been outside? It was very hot. It's very serious. It's been getting hotter so consistently that they now say that no one under the age of 27 has ever experienced in their lifetimes a colder than average month. This is tragic, but those people have also never experienced a good Woody Allen movie, and they seem to be surviving. In Australia, where it is summer now, of course, the heat is so extreme that meteorologists have had to add new colors to the weather maps. That's true. Mm-hmm. Because the red wasn't enough anymore. They had to move on to, like, flammable purple. It's so hot there, they're just throwing the shrimps outside. There's no need for a Barbie.
And the shrimps come running back in going like, are you crazy?
It's so hot out there.
Kangaroos are filling their pouches with ice.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so hot in Australia, the dingo had to blow on my baby before he ate it. It was terrible. Here, Madeline, is your last quote.
Genghis Khan, Nickelback, head lice, root canals, colonoscopies, and Donald Trump.
That's a list of things that are, according to a poll released this week, more popular than what?
What Carl did on his winter break.
Let's leave Carl's private life out of it. So no, this is what we'll do.
We just became match game.
So exactly. Let's have Carl read the list again, and I want you to keep in mind these are things that, according to a recent poll released this week, are more popular than something. Here we go.
Genghis Khan, Nickelback, head lice, root canals, colonoscopies, and Donald Trump.
All of those things are more popular with the public than what?
I of our government? I have no
idea. Yes, Congress. You were thinking to yourself, I'm not going to say the government. That's too obvious. Yeah, and beating out Congress also, in terms of popularity with the public, are the NFL replacement refs, Carneys and France. But Congress...
Carneys? Why, are they unpopular?
Apparently. I do want to let you all know, and if there are any Congress people listening, they do remain more popular than the Kardashians.
Oh.
Lindsay Lohan.
Mm-hmm.
Gonorrhea.
Now, why are people upset with gonorrhea?
Here you go again, Poundstone.
Kim Kardashian did come in lower than Congress, did she
yes,
not?
Yes, okay. Which is weird,
because
right. A lot of people
watch... But that's not weird at all. Kim Kardashian would be lower than Congress?
More people watch the Kardashians on TV than watch Congress.
Yeah, but it's to know where they are so you can avoid them.
Carl, how did Madeline do in our quiz?
Madeline, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or home answering machine.
Well done. Thanks for playing, Madeline.
Thank you.
We want to remind everybody they can join us here most weeks at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago. For tickets and more information, go to WBEZ.org, and you can find a link at our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can also find out about our big nationwide cinema event on May 2nd, live from New York. Wait Wait is coming to a theater near you, live in glorious 2 dimensions. Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Adam, in another case of robots taking jobs away from hardworking humans, scientists at the Health and Safety Laboratory in Britain, I guess laboratory in Britain, have a new robot that will help with medical research by doing what?
Complain.
No.
Really?
No.
Although
it has reason to complain, but no, it's not.
Suffer. It will
no?
get sick. It'll.
It does. Well, it gets sick. It expresses itself being sick.
It's a vomiting robot.
It's a vomiting robot, Adam. That's
wow.
what it is.
Of course it is.
The robot is known as Vomiting Larry. Really, though, what's wrong with these scientists? They didn't name him Ralph. Anyway, what Larry looks like...
Or Chuck.
Larry is used in the research into the spread of contagious disease. He looks like half a mannequin, the top half, modified to vomit, and they use him to see how far he can spread things through mechanical vomiting.
How do you know if Larry's sick or just been drinking?
Yeah. Or
and does he go, I'm fine, don't worry. I can hold it together. I'm fine. Fine. Hang.
No, they need to make another robot to hold his head, I guess.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's a legitimate purpose. They're trying to find out these important things about human contagion. But
yeah,
still, can you imagine how hard it is for Vomiting Larry at robot parties? It's like, well, I'm C-3PO. I speak thousands of languages. I'm the Terminator. I shoot stuff. I'm Vomiting Larry. Blah! Coming up, empty that nest. It's Bluff the Listener. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play. And the dude abides in our Not My Job game. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and IFC, Back with Portlandia, starring Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein. New episodes Friday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on IFC. Ancestry.com, providing online genealogy tools for solving the puzzles of family history. Learn more at tryancestry.com. And eSurance, insurance for the modern world, offering car insurance tools to guide customers from quote to claim, online or via mobile at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
We'll be right back.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, and Kiri O'Connor. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Bluff the listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Marius from Arlington, Texas.
Hey, Marius, how are things?
Good, how are you?
I'm fine. It's a good time to be named Marius, what with Les Mis out there, right?
Yes, I've heard that a lot lately.
Really?
Yes.
Can you actually do the numbers when somebody says, oh, you're like Marius from Les Mis? Can you break out into, like, one more day or whatever it is?
I wish I could. Unfortunately, I'm not as familiar as others.
Oh, I see. Well, that's disappointing.
Yes.
Marius, it's nice to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Marius's topic?
Failure to launch.
For parents, there's nothing like having your kid home all the time, unless your kid is 35. This week, our panelists are going to read you three stories of parents going to extreme lengths to get their overgrown kids out of the house and on their own. Guess the true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes, I am.
First, let's hear from Kiri O'Connor.
When 27-year-old Lindsay White decided to move back in with her mother to her childhood white colonial in Cheshire, Connecticut, her mother, Peggy, resolved to be patient, but she was less than thrilled. When I was 27, I had a job, a mortgage, and a 2-year-old on my hip. What is the matter with these kids? She told her local newspaper recently, after everything went horribly wrong. You see, 6 months into the new living arrangement, Peggy White decided to fight back. She decided if Lindsay wanted to live like a little girl, she'd be treated like a little girl. First, Peggy brought all Lindsay's stuffed animals down from the attic and arranged them in her room. A day or two later, the dinner menu suddenly changed. Fish sticks, mac and cheese, chicken nuggets. Next, Nick Jr. was on heavy rotation on the TV. Then came the light-up sneakers, the trip to the petting zoo, the nightly Harry Potter readings. Still, Lindsay seemed clueless, so Peggy pulled out her last card. On a trip to the mall, with Lindsay dressed in striped leggings and a top with a cute purple butterfly, she suddenly slipped a toddler harness over Lindsay's head. Lindsay was a bit horrified, but not so much as the other shoppers. Twitter blew up with photos of Lindsay with the hashtag adult baby. A local TV station picked it up, tracked down the Whites, and the story went viral. Lindsay, who was looking for an apartment now, was especially philosophical. Until the harness thing, I didn't get what was going on, she said. Up to then, it was, like, the greatest month of my life.
If you want to live with your parents, you're going to live like a kid. That happened in Connecticut. Your next story of adult-onset childhood comes from Adam Felber.
Like a lot of Western parents, China's Li Feng had a recalcitrant 23-year-old son who sat at home playing online computer games instead of trying to hold down a job. But instead of attempting touchy-feely solutions like career counseling or therapy, Mr. Feng chose a strategy that might seem out of step with our modern Western parenting. He hired a team of assassins and turned them loose on young Zhao Feng. Suddenly, whenever Zhao Feng signed on to his favorite game, World of Warcraft, a stronger character would instantly appear and eliminate Zhao Feng's character. If he could never play the games without being instantly murdered by virtual hitmen, Mr. Feng reasoned, Zhao Feng would lose interest and find a job. Mr. Feng was wrong. At least about the job part. Quote, I can play or not play. It doesn't bother me, the son said. Quote, I'm not looking for any job. I want to take some time to find one that suits me. Which made the older Feng realize what he now considers the one flaw in hiring virtual assassins for your children. The virtual part.
A parent hires virtual assassins to go after his adult son in online video games. Your last story of a grown-up finally growing up comes from Paula Poundstone.
Wayne Ogden of Bloomington, Indiana, advised his college student son, Zachary, to minor in philosophy and major in something more practical. But Zachary didn't want to let anything keep him from his dream and got his degree in philosophy. If his dream included living in his parents' basement for 2 years, texting a lot, forgetting how to do his own laundry, and sleeping till noon after staggering home from the local bar each night, he was wildly successful. Wayne Ogden had many man-to-man talks with his son about making one's own opportunity, working one's way up, or at least getting dressed and not leaving half-eaten cup of noodles cups all over the house. When none of it seemed to take, he broke into a neighbor's house, stole some jewelry, electronics, and cash, and planted evidence that would incriminate his son, Zachary. I wasn't trying to send him to jail, Wayne Ogden explained to a courtroom full at his trial for breaking and entering and fraud. I just wanted to see him put on a suit. I know he did it out of love, says Zachary. I hope he's proud of me now. I visit him every week. I think the structure is helping me.
All right, here are your choices. One of these was a real method some parent tried to use to get their kid going in life. Was it from Kiri O'Connor, a woman who insists on treating her child as if she were a child still, despite her age of being 27? Was it from Adam Felber, a guy who got so fed up with his son playing video games all day that he hired people to get online and stop the kid from doing it by shooting his character as soon as he appeared? Or from Paula Poundstone, was it a guy who framed his son for robbery just so his son would have the maturing experience of being a criminal defendant?
What I've learned from World of Warcraft is anything can happen, so I think I'm going to go with Adam's story.
You're going to choose Adam's story of the father who got fed up with the son playing violent video games all day. Well, to bring you the real story, we spoke to somebody who knew something about it.
He went online and solicited a number of virtual hitmen to do his dirty work.
That was Jim Lin. He's the curator of the Digi Dad blog, talking about the Chinese father who did just that to get his son off the computer screen. Congratulations, Marius. You got it right. Well done.
Thank you.
You earned a point. To Adam Felber, you've won our prize. Carol Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well done.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for playing, Marius.
Thank you, Peter.
Why can't they be like we were, perfect in every way? What's the matter with kids today?
And now the game where we ask somebody really cool to do something kind of lame. Jeff Bridges has been an actor literally his whole life. He made his film debut at 4 months. He's done dozens of movies over the decades, winning an Oscar along the way. But he will always be identified with one defining immortal performance, that of Prince Lear in The Last Unicorn. No, I'm kidding. It's, of course, the dude from The Big Lebowski, and now he has co-written a book drawing life lessons from that film and that character. The book is called The Dude and the Zen Master. Jeff Bridges, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, John.
It's great to talk to you.
Great to be here on the show.
It's fabulous. We you've given this such an entree by writing a book called The Dude and the Zen Master, because like everybody else, we just want to ignore all the amazing things you've done in your life and just talk to you about The Dude. This is from, of course, The Big Lebowski, the movie you made in 1998 with the Coen brothers. And for there may be one or two people in our audience who have not yet seen The Big Lebowski. How would you describe The Dude as a character?
Well, The Dude is a guy who doesn't really do much. He's more into being dude. He's not much of a doer.
Yeah, he just abides, is the phrase.
Yeah,
the dude
yeah,
abides.
Yes.
When you made this movie back in the late 90s, did you have any idea it would become the phenomenon and that character would become such a touchstone?
Well, it's, you know, a Bernie, my buddy who's a Zen master, he came up to me one day and he said, did you know that in Buddhist circles, many folks feel that the dude is a Zen master? I said, what are you talking about, man? We didn't talk Zen or any kind of spirituality when we were making that movie. And he goes, oh, yeah, it's full of koans. You know what a koan is,
right? Yeah, they wrote the movie.
That's a koan. That's what Bernie's point was. He says, come on. You know, in our film, the Lebowski is filled with modern-day koans, you know, like, the dude abides might be one, a new shit has come to light, shut the f*** up, Donnie.
Yeah, those are all classics. In fact, I've read the book. The book is a dialogue between you and your friend Bernie, who is a legitimate Zen master, and you draw these lessons of life from the dude. So if you were become a teacher, which in this writing this book you are, and you're teaching the concept of dudeness to acolytes like us, can you give us lessons in dudosity?
Dudosity. Well, let's see. You've got. Let's work on the koan. see that that rug really tied the room together.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of a favorite one. And you know, life is very diverse. We have all of these different things, you know, that pull us away from kind of the center and from our, you know, our interconnectedness. And so we ask that question: what ties us all together?
We've only been talking for a little while, but nonetheless, I'm inclined to ask you a question.
Are you
actually the dude? I mean, you sound just in conversation with you as a person, Jeff Bridges, not un-dude-like.
Well, actually, no, I'm not.
Well, but so much. I mean, I'm almost. I guess I am serious in that I've seen you do so many different kinds of roles. I've seen you play everything from the hero in the remake of King Kong in the 70s to the villain in the recent Iron Man film. You're a tremendous range as an actor, and yet just the dude seems close to you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've got a lot of dude in me. That's for sure. Yeah.
And it also sounds, I mean, you also hear about actors, someone having a difficult relationship with the characters that people think they are. It seems like you're comfortable being the dude. You wrote a book about the dude.
Yeah, well, you know, early on in my career, I was very kind of concerned about my persona. You know, my dad, Lloyd Bridges,
had this
wonderful series called Sea Hunt.
Yeah.
In the 60s. And, you know, he kind of suffered from being typecast, you know. So early on in my career, I did everything I could to kind of shake up my personas. But now, I'm 63 years old. I've kind of given that one up, and I'm just kind of letting it rip now, you know.
One of the movies that you made that I loved was The Fabulous Baker Boys.
Oh, yeah, that's a favorite.
And that was a great movie, among other things, because you played you, and your brother played your brother,
yeah,
which was exciting. And we understand that you had such a good time with your brother on that film that you put him in the hospital.
Oh God, you know, my dad taught both of us how to stage fight. So that fight that we had was a lot of fun for us to kind of gaff that fight and figure out how to do it. And we were, you know, cooking along like this, and we made one very serious error.
Yeah,
we didn't have a safe word.
So I've usually heard that phrase in a completely different context.
Exactly. You know, we're doing all this fake stuff, and then I finally grab his hand, and I'm gonna, you know, break my piano playing brother's hands, you know, and I start to bend him, and he goes, "Ah, oh, you know, you're hurting me," you know. And I said, "Act your ass off, man." And he said, "No, I'm not kidding." I said, "Yes, go, you're wonderful." And I realized I just got too into it, you know, and I hurt the poor guy.
Oh.
Paid him back for all that teasing he did to me while I was growing up.
Really? Was he a cruel...
Oh, he was a vicious teaser, yeah.
Was he? What sort of things did he do to you?
He was a very subtle, very skilled teaser. All he would have to do would be point at me.
Point at you?
He would point at me, and he would not stop pointing at me. For hours on end. And he had this expression on his face that he's, you know, would read, "I'm pointing at you."
Oh,
and
man.
I would, you know, and we could even be at the dinner table, and, you know, I would be freaking out, and Mom and Dad would say, you know, "Stop pointing at Jeff." And Bo would say, "I'm not pointing at him." But I could tell that he was pointing at me under the table.
Well, Jeff Bridges, we are delighted to talk to you, and we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You Will Never Again Know a Passion Like This.
Aha!
You're one of the Bridges of Hollywood, so naturally we thought we'd ask you about the Bridges of Madison County. Answer two out of three questions about the literary phenomenon and movie of the 1990s, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their voicemail. Carl, who is actor Jeff Bridges playing for?
Jeff is playing for Edward Narcano of San Dimas, California.
Uh-huh.
You ready to go?
Yes, I am.
All right, here's your first question. The book by Robert James Waller was written in 11 days. It ended up spending a year or more on the New York Times bestseller list. It became the best-selling novel in American history up to that time.
Wow.
Many credited the prose style. Which of these is a real excerpt from a love scene in the book? Was it A, quote, "Francesca felt as if she was an invited guest at the greatest smorgasbord she had ever known, except instead of casseroles and jello salads, it was a buffet of sensual delight," unquote. B, quote, it was rough, sudden, needy, graceless, hungry, kind of sloppy, a little rude, there were some noises, then sighs. Or C, quote, he said, I am the highway and the peregrine and all the sails that ever went to sea, unquote.
Oh, yeah. I'm going with A, man.
The greatest smorgasbord she had ever known?
Yeah, well, yeah. What do you say? Well, how'd that do? No?
No, it was C. That's what the Kincaid, the photographer, says in a moment of passion. I am the highway and the peregrine and all the sails that ever went to sea.
Wow, A was better.
Yeah, well. Next question. You still have two more chances here. After 4 days of passion, the Iowa housewife, Francesca, tells the photographer Kincaid it can never be. What reason does she give? A, if you don't get out of here right now, the last picture you'll take is of my husband's shotgun barrel. B, I cannot think of restraining you for a moment. To do that would be to kill the wild, magnificent animal that is you. Or C, you can't stay. I've got to help slaughter the hogs.
I'm going with B, man.
You're going to go B. I cannot think of restraining you for a moment. Yes. You're right. Ooh. You're absolutely right.
Nice.
This is exciting.
Yeah, man. If I get two, I kind of win.
No, you don't kind of win. You win.
Oh, great. All right.
There are rules. This isn't NOM. All right. Time to give the critics a chance. Which of these was written about the book by Mr. John Margolis, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune? A, an insipid, fatuous, mealy-mouthed, third-rate soap opera with a semi-fascist point of view. B, so unrealistic, a male sexual fantasy, it makes a typical letter to Penthouse seem like NPR. Or C, a beautiful, lyrical story of sudden but true passion that reduced this correspondent to a puddle on the floor.
Yeah, C, man.
Really? Right. You think John Margolis at the Chicago Tribune was a sentimentalist?
I just puddle. That word got me. You know that.
Who am I to say no to the dude? You're going to go with C?
Yeah, man.
All right. Yeah.
Buzzered yourself.
You did. You buzzed yourself.
It's A.
It was an insipid, fatuous, mealy-mouthed, third-rate soap opera with a semi-fascist point of view. Yeah, he didn't like the book very much. Carl, how did Jeff Bridges do in our quiz?
Well, Jeff needed two correct answers to win. For Edward Narcano, he had just one correct answer.
Oh,
man. Sorry, Edward.
Oh, well. You still abide, though. You still abide. Oh, Jeff Bridges, his new book is The Dude and the Zen Master. It's in bookstores now. Jeff Bridges, thank you so much for joining us.
Bye, Jeff.
Wait, don't tell me. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Ally Bank, who believes intelligent news and knowledgeable customer service should be available around the clock. Learn more at allybank.com. The Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture, poetryfoundation.org, and Lumber Liquidators, supporting the Ronald McDonald House Charities, the National Braille Press, and NPR. Information at lumberliquidators.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
And WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kessel. We're playing this week with Kerry O'Connor, Adam Felber, and Paula Poundstone. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just 1 minute, Carl reveals his hip-hop alter ego, Lim Shady. In our listener limerick challenge, if you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Kiri, the inauguration is just over a week away, and if you haven't already booked a room, you might consider the Madison Hotel's inaugural town and country package. For just $47,000,
wow,
you get four nights in the presidential suite, you get a car and a driver, a couple's massage, and what?
You get to do Michelle Obama's eyebrows.
That would be good, but no, not that.
Okay, I think I need a hand.
All right, well, it's like if you're going to be a big shot, you're going to live that way, you don't have time to come up with your own hashtags, do you?
Oh, you got someone to Twitter for you?
Yes, they're calling it your social media butler.
Oh, man.
So you buy the package, you get your car, you get your driver, you get to go to the inauguration, all the stuff, right? This person will tweet, Facebook, Instagram, and text pictures of you at every swanky ball you attend in case you're tired of texting pictures of your balls yourself.
Now, would they just tweet what you told them to tweet, or they would
come up with clever tweets for you?
Yeah. I don't know. Well, presumably, they'd have to add some creativity. Otherwise, you could be doing it yourself, I guess. I don't know.
Well, no. I would just like to not have to push the buttons myself. I wouldn't want anybody to replace my words.
So,
so
you'd be like, Crawford, take a tweet.
That's exactly right.
Delicious hot pastrami sandwich for lunch. Hashtag yum. Very good, lady.
The master is at 49 characters. Shall I attempt to compress that for you?
You know, you're joking, but this is exactly my fantasy.
Really? I know a place that can make it come true for you for just $47,000, Paula.
Perhaps I can replace the word great with the letters G, R, and the numeral 8 for the master.
By the way, I would never do that.
No.
Perhaps a colon and a bracket to indicate some sort of amusement.
Kiri, according to a 5-page official letter of reprimand that was found and posted on the Smoking Gun website, an employee of the Social Security Administration was officially punished for his what?
Oh, geez, I should know this. Did it have to do with office behavior?
It did. Something he was doing in the office that people found objectionable.
Did it have to do with bodily...
It did.
Emissions?
Kiri. It did, Kiri. Quite.
He was emitting.
He was. He was reprimanded officially for his excessive flatulence.
Exactly.
Which is the sort of thing that happens in offices, we all know. But this was the government, so it had to be done according to the rules. The letter, which will go on in the employee's file, goes on for 5 pages in dry bureaucratic language, describing the extent of the problem and the failed attempts to deal with it, including the employee's somewhat lame offer to turn on a fan. I'll quote the supervisor, "I explained to you that turning on the fan would cause the smell to spread." What's amazing in this, and I encourage you all to look at it, is the detailed, precise log of gas attacks with dates and exact times. There were 4 on September 7th, 1 on the 10th, 3 on September 11th, now a day that will be forever associated with tragedy. The worst day, the shots fired at Fart Sumter, if you will, came on September 19th. When there were 9 emissions, including ones at 242, 252, and 254. The next document to be leaked, of course, will be the formal complaint from the Social Security employee who was forced by her supervisor to log and time farts.
Those last two times sound a little suspiciously close together.
Really?
I'm wondering whether there was a second farter.
On the gassy knoll!
On the gassy knoll!
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago. And check out our How to Do Everything podcast. This week, how to finally remember which one is Bill Pullman and which one is Bill Paxton. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Rachel Redler in Kansas City, Missouri.
Hey, Rachel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Tell me, is everything up to date in Kansas City?
Oh, it sure is.
What do you do there?
I'm a waitress at the Classic Cookie.
What is the Classic Cookie?
It's a restaurant that serves breakfast and lunch and, of course, cookies.
Of course?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Classic Cookie. Is this one of these great family restaurants that's been there for generations?
It is. My mom is the owner.
That's awesome. I love those places.
And we ship everywhere, so we can send you some, Peter.
Really?
Yeah.
You ship, wait a minute, you ship like breakfasts?
No, well, I mean, we could, but yuck. But
yeah. You're telling me you'll send us a cookie?
Oh, yeah. You tell me where.
Right here. I like cookies. Rachel, it's nice to have you on the show. Carl now is going to perform for you three news-related limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly in two of the limericks, you will be a winner. You ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
Here's your first limerick.
As I'm making a mess of this pork, I measure my load, speed, and torque. My silverware knows if my appetite grows, my diet's controlled by my...
fork.
Yes, indeed. The so-called nagging fork, brand name Happy Fork, detects when you're eating too quickly and emits a series of beeps and vibrations. The idea is if you slow down and chew properly, you will fill up faster, thereby eating less. It's the latest in a whole line of nagging dishes, who, by the way, are in your sink, constantly reminding you it's about time you did something around the house, you lump. Here's your next limerick.
For cruising around 55, don't listen to I Will Survive. My playlist of songs will keep focus strong. These tunes keep you safe when you...
drive.
Yes, indeed. Road rage, getting out of hand. Turns out certain songs can help you drive more safely. London Metropolitan University compiled a list of 10 songs with the ideal beat and tempo to keep you calm and focused. The songs include... Come Away With Me by Norah Jones, The Scientist by Coldplay, and Never Had a Dream Come True by S Club 7. Interestingly, these are also the top 10 songs that will help you hate music.
I don't think that's a great idea.
What?
Because I have the hardest time staying focused when I drive.
I find that hard to believe.
Wow. I love the idea that there would be songs that could help. Because even if I listen to books on tape sometimes when I drive, and then I get someplace and I go, how the hell did I get here? I don't remember any of this.
Yeah.
And that's like a scary feeling.
I'd be insulted if I was any of the musicians on that list. Because basically the scientists are saying that this music is fundamentally not going to catch your attention. That's kind of insulting, isn't it?
All right, very good. Here is your last limerick, Rachel.
Okay.
Jack Lew signs his name kind of funny, like a slinky that's melted and runny. As treasury guy, some weirdness looms nigh. His scribbles will be on our...
money.
Yes! President Obama this week nominated Jack Lew to be Treasury Secretary, and if he is confirmed, his signature will therefore appear on all newly minted bills. The thing is, Mr. Lew has the most illegible signature anyone has ever seen. It's just a series of connected loops, like the little frosting curl on a Hostess cupcake, or as New York Magazine describes it, a, quote, slinky that has lost its spring. The president says, and he said this, that Lew will work on his penmanship. He could do that, or he could just change his name to Treasury Secretary Ooze.
I really think that if that is the way the man signs his name, then that's the way he signs his name. And that if he was a good Treasury Secretary, perhaps we could back off in this other area.
You think?
Well, if we are
thought that
just let
had,
him sign
yeah.
his name,
if we are spending too much money, wouldn't it be great to have a Treasury Secretary who can't actually write a check?
That's true. Carol, how did Rachel do in our quiz?
Well, congratulations, Rachel. You had 3 correct answers. You win our prize.
Hot diggity.
Hot diggity dog.
Hot diggity.
Congratulations. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Adam Felber and Kiri O'Connor both have 3 points. Paula Poundstone has 2.
Okay, Paula, you're in third place. You're up first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank.
Perfect.
After meeting with the NRA, Joe Biden announced he would present recommendations to curb blank by next Tuesday.
Gun sales.
Yes, gun violence. Members of both parties criticized President Obama's decision to nominate blank to be the next Secretary of Defense.
Chuck Hagel.
Yes, investigators are trying to determine what caused a blank traveling from New Jersey to New York to crash Wednesday.
One of those boats, the ferries.
Yes, a ferry, one of those boats. On Thursday, the movie Lincoln led the pack with 12 blank nominations.
Academy Award, Oscar.
Yes, inspired by claims made by Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps, scientists this week determined that blanking is, quote, fine.
The water.
No, the water is fine. And the water, they said, stays fine even after people pee in it. This week, Oprah Winfrey announced that she would be interviewing blank about his doping scandal next week.
Lance Armstrong.
Right, in a somewhat surprising move. This week, the National Father's Day Council named blank Father of the Year.
Oh, I think I know this. I do know it. Hold on. Father of the Year, Clinton.
Yes, Bill Clinton. Very good. Among those pleading guilty to participating in a notorious, destructive 2011 hockey riot in Canada is blank.
My cat, Mrs. Fezziwig.
No. Pleading guilty to participating in the hockey riot was Miss Congeniality. Sophie Laboissonniere was awarded the title of Miss Congeniality in the 2011 Miss Coastal Vancouver pageant, a title which she proved she had earned by being the nicest and sweetest rioter looting and breaking into buildings during the riot. Her lawyer has asked for leniency and said that officials shouldn't be that surprised, since for the talent portion of the competition, she rolled and torched a car.
But so sweetly.
Isn't it nice? Carl, how did Paula do in our quiz?
Paula had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Paula has taken the lead.
Whoa! Well done, Paula. We have flipped a coin. Adam has decided to go next. Fill in the blank. White House officials said Tuesday they are considering removing all troops from blank after 2014.
Afghanistan.
Right. After it announced it would be holding a media event for a big unveiling next week, stocks of social media giant blank jumped.
Facebook.
Right. The National Cathedral announced this week that effective immediately, it will officiate weddings for blank couples.
Same sex.
Right. Tests this week proved that a Chicago man who died shortly after blanking was poisoned with cyanide.
Winning the lottery.
Right. Returning to work after being hospitalized for a blood clot caused by a fall, Hillary Clinton's staff presented her with blank.
A helmet.
Yes, for the first time in 10 years, musician blank released a new single.
David Bowie.
Right, in a surprisingly candid interview with Dateline, Al Roker confessed that during a 2002 visit to the White House, he blanked.
He pooped in his own pants.
He did. A jewel heist in Australia went wrong this week when the thieves accidentally blanked.
Broke into a candy store.
No, they tunneled into a KFC instead of the jewelers. Close.
Were.
This was Peter Welsh and Dwayne Doolin's third attempt to rob the same jewelry shop. They smashed the window. That didn't work. And when they tried to break in through the back door, they ended up at the local Animal Welfare League. So when they tunneled through the wall and found themselves in the KFC next door instead of the jewelry store, they just threw up their hands and robbed the KFC instead. Carl, how did Adam do in our quiz?
Adam had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. He now has 17 points, and Adam has taken the lead.
Wow, that was masterful. So how many does Kiri need to win the game?
7 to tie, 8 to win outright.
Here we go, Kiri. This is for the game.
No stress.
Fill in the blank. Boston declared a public health emergency on Wednesday after confirming 700 cases of blank.
The flu.
Right. This week, President Obama nominated John Brennan to be the next head of the blank.
CIA.
Yes, because of health problems, the inauguration for Venezuelan President Blank was postponed.
Hugo Chavez.
Right after flights were canceled due to 3 incidents in 3 days, concerns grew about Boeing's new Blank
Dreamliner.
Plan. Yes, the Dreamliner. In spite of his claims of innocence, police at a protest in Belarus arrested a Blank for blanking.
A man for applauding.
Right, a one-armed man for clapping. This week, Hasbro announced that fan votes will determine which playing piece will be retired from the game. Blank?
Monopoly.
Right. In this year's Baseball Hall of Fame voting, Blank received enough votes to get in?
Nobody.
Right. Officials in Canada are reminding citizens that hamsters giving birth, bad pizza, and Sasquatch sightings are not good reasons to blank.
To drive off the road.
No, to call 911.
Ooh.
Police officials say people need to remember that the number is for emergencies only, and even though it may seem like an emergency when the hamster you just bought unexpectedly gives birth to 10 babies, that's not the kind of emergency they mean. Carl, did Kiri do well enough to win? She came close.
She came very close, Peter. She had 7 correct answers for 14 more points. She now has 17 points and is tied with Adam Felber. So this week, Adam Felber and Kiri O'Connor are co-champions.
Congratulations. Well done. Bravo.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Paula, how do you feel?
Good.
In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists whose face will grace the new trillion-dollar coin when they get around to minting it. But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Ally Bank, who believes intelligent news and knowledgeable customer service should be available around the clock. Learn more at AllyBank.com. Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information is available at Progressive.com. And IFC, back with Portlandia, starring Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein. New episodes Friday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on IFC. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, benevolent overlord. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer coordinator is Ray Teresi. We'd like to welcome our brand new intern, Miles Dornbos, who's even more of a nerd than I am. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Dolarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillag. And here's the climax of all the credits. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will be on the trillion-dollar coin? Kiri O'Connor.
Beyonce. After which she will ascend into heaven showing just a little underboob.
Adam Felber.
Well, given that it's imaginary money born out of mismanagement, desperation, and bankruptcy, the only real choice is Donald Trump.
And Paula Poundstone.
Yes, given that it's a bad sign altogether, it's not going to just be one face. It's going to be an aerial shot of the top of the heads of the entire Congress clustered together. And on the other side, France.
Well, if we see any of those faces on the trillion-dollar coin panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Kiri O'Connor, Adam Felber, and Paula Poundstone. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you right back here next week. Is NPR. Thank you.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.